As the Mideast war winds down, new challenges to an already strained veteran benefit system are looming. The backlog of Veterans Administration claims is almost a million nationwide, and other services to ease the transition for returning veterans must counter the headwinds of a persistently weak economy. State and federal veterans agencies are setting new goals and are bracing to meet them. We'll look at plans for Michigan veterans and related issues just ahead on Media Meet. And welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm your host, Bill Hart. Our guests are Michigan Senior Deputy Director for Veterans Affairs, Jason Allen, and Oscar G. Johnson Veterans Administration Medical Center Public Affairs Officer, Brad Nelson. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
By way of background, can we get a general description of the agencies you represent, including the programs and resources administered? First, the Michigan Veterans Affairs Office.
We are headquartered out of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Okay. And one of the things that we're significantly restructuring under the Snyder administration is how veteran services are delivered in the state. Currently, out of the 17 different departments, 15 of them have veteran services. And so there's a lot of discussion, internal study going on how we can streamline this. We currently operate the Jacob Eddy Home, the Grand Rapids Home for Veterans. We have a $50 million trust fund. And then we also have all the DD-214s going back since World War II. In addition to that, we have been sort of tasked with anything veteran in the state. The governor's office, people just call us because we have the name Veterans Affairs attached to us.
Okay. Now the Oscar G. Johnson Veterans Administration Medical Center. Grant?
Sure. Well, as the Department of Veteran Affairs, we actually are divided into three administrations. We have the National Cemetery Administration, the Veteran Benefits Administration, and the Veterans Health Administration. And that's where the Oscar G. Johnson VA Medical Center falls under, the VHA, or Veterans Health Administration. We have, Abraham Lincoln had said, you know, to care for him who had borne the battle, we'd probably say to care for him and her who have borne the battle nowadays. Sure. But that is our overarching mission, is to take care of our veterans who have served. Oscar G. Johnson VA, we're one of the smallest. There's about approximately 160 medical centers across the nation. We're one of the smallest, but we have one of the largest geographic areas east of the Mississippi. And we've served last year in 2011 nearly 20,000 veterans. And we extend from Sault Ste. Marie to Ashland, Wisconsin, to from Menominee and Rhineland, up to north to Houghton, Hancock, and Marquette, of course. And we have, to do that, it's not just the medical center. We have seven community outpatient clinics. Sault Ste. Marie, Manistique, Marquette, one here in Marquette, Hancock, Menominee, Rhinelander, and Ironwood. So that includes those. And again, we have nearly 26,000 veterans enrolled, and we've served 20,000 of them last year.
Amazing. Jason, something noted when we talked about a year ago now, the fact that while Michigan ranks 11th nationally in the number of veterans, total VA expenditures per capita in Michigan are less than that of Guam. Did I get that right, or have things changed over the?
We have seen some increases. We're looking at it in the gross domestic expenditure, and gross domestic expenditure is put through from Brad's senior leadership, and this covers the expenditures that go on for infrastructure at the different medical facilities, and then the different programs that are available. Michigan saw about a $500 increase. Last year, we were at approximately $3,400 per veteran. Now we're at about $3,900 for veterans. Okay. We closed the gap a little bit on the spread between 52nd to 53rd, and we are diligently working on that. And so we were very pleased to see a $500 increase over gross expenditures. And that is calculated by the number of veterans that we have in the state, which is approximately 702,000, divided by the gross domestic expenditures by the Veterans Administration statewide.
Okay. Is this or had this been a funding problem per se, or is it a utilization problem?
I think one of the things that has happened is that this has not been a priority of leadership in Lansing in previous administrations. Mm-hmm. And really, after the Twin Towers and the attacks at 9/11, veterans funding started to go up dramatically. And we saw that gap continued to not really close in the state of Michigan. Now, there are other anecdotal stories that you've got to take a look at on the utilizations of benefits. Okay. As Brad knows, we had a higher percentage of people on wonderful, generous auto pension programs and health care programs. We also then had a lot of stigma with VA care, which they have remarkably turned around over the last 5 to 7 years. And then there's this whole issue of awareness. And so many people don't recognize the aspect of they were in Vietnam and the presumptive diseases, or in the first Gulf War and the presumptive diseases there. Mm-hmm. As just for example, Michigan has 250,000 Vietnam-era veterans. And we have some of the lowest utilization of presumptive diseases like diabetes, cancer, soft tissue diseases, ALS, out of any state in the union.
See. Brad, how might this affect daily business at the VA Medical Center? Are you looking for growth? Nationally, there appears to be a spike in disabilities and pensions.
We are expecting growth, and yes, we are looking for growth, because that is our mission, is to care for them. If there is a legitimate need, we want to care for them. And I was going to go back to what Jason was saying, mm-hmm. is that is one of my jobs, too, is to get the word out and tell the VA story, yeah. not just for the public to know what we're doing, but to get the word to the veterans about the benefits and the services that we do provide. And like I say, the presumptive, we're getting that out. We have a great department. There's two nurses that does a lot of outreach, especially with the current troops that are in Afghanistan and Iraq. When they come back, they make sure they go to the post-deployment debriefings. In fact, we actually have 45% of the veterans in our area, which is about 54,000. We okay. have 45% that are enrolled. So we have a much higher enrollment up here in the UP and northern Wisconsin because of outreach efforts.
Great. In May of this year, the Department of Veterans Affairs released the geographic distribution and VA expenditures, what's called the GDX mm-hmm. report. It covers demographics, VA expenditures, compensation and pensions, medical care and the right. like, a whole bunch of statistics. Right. It's an important document for planning. What are the most significant facts or trends you see right now?
I think item number one is that we're trying to track the population. And let's go back to that, is that out of the 703,000, 702,000 veterans, we have about 100,000 World War II veterans, 100,000 Korean, 250,000 Vietnam-era veterans like yourself. Okay. And we have approximately about 100,000 that would be peacetime. That would be after Korea, before Vietnam, and then before Desert Storm.
Okay.
And then we're discharging, on average, about 8,000 to 10,000 veterans a year into the state. So the first area that we're trying to target is the underutilization of the diabetes, cancer from the exposure to Agent Orange. Because that is, those are presumptive. If you have those characteristics from your military records, then you can automatically get signed up for VA health care, and then there's also likely a pension benefit. So that's our first area. Then the second big area is, and I wouldn't say this is one and two, but the next big area is how do we make sure that the kids coming back and the men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are aware of their benefits? Because in our trends, we have not seen a real uptick in the utilization of the GI Bill. Now, our statistical data shows that Lansing Community College is our number one college in the state for the utilization of the GI Bill, which is number 221 out of all colleges and universities.
Now, President must be doing some
right. So President yeah. Haynes has done a very good job here in Northern Michigan, and I know that they're doing the same types of things over at Lake Superior State. I went over and met with their team on how to better attract their campuses, because the GI Bill is worth approximately $1,000 a month. Living expenses, in-state tuition. So if you want to learn to become a postdoctorate at a university, or if you want to learn how to be a plumber, that will pay for it. And then also for tooling or equipment or books, about $1,000 a month. And so that is the other big areas, the gentlemen and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Let's talk about that a minute. America has over 23 million veterans overall, Michigan over 700,000, about 31,000 of them are in the Upper Peninsula. Soon more will be coming home. What's likely to be Michigan's returning veteran census? Do we know?
It's going to be very interesting, because we had the privilege of meeting with your senior leadership, Secretary Sinseki, Chief of Staff Gingrich. And the challenge is that they really don't know where these guys are going to land. And so the issue is that we still have, if you take a look at Michigan, northern Michigan, we have a very rich heritage as far as people signing up for services, partially because of patriotism, partially because of economic opportunity.
Okay.
But, you know, there are so many other states, and this is where the governor has been pushing very diligently to figure out a way to take a look at how do we get men and women coming back from the services to the state of Michigan. Because there's a great opportunity in the careers moving forward as Michigan rebounds.
All right. The U.S. House has approved legislation in late May to boost veterans' health care spending, funds to compensate record numbers of Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans claiming service-related disabilities and that sort of thing as they return home. It means $2.2 billion increase for VA medical services and a 20% increase for pension and disabilities. There's considerable debate on this because I know the White House has threatened to veto, not because of anything related to veterans necessarily, but because they fear it would mean cuts to other domestic programs, you know, that the administration is fond of. So do we know where, you know, even though we may not know where the legislation is right now, what do you think of the initiative itself? What do you think of the direction?
It's really hard to comment on that from my perspective. Okay. We're the end user on that, so you know, really, I can't comment on that at this point.
Okay.
And then I think you know, when we're working with the governor and our General Vadney wants is we want to make sure that we're utilizing our benefits. And so the question gets into, without really looking at the budget, I go back to what George Washington said, is that a country is judged by how we honor our veterans. And so we just have to make sure that those resources are available. But we are underutilizing our benefits. And if we could even get to, like, Ohio's standards or many of in the middle of the pack, that'd be about a $1.6 billion additional dollars flowing back to our veterans in the state of Michigan.
Okay.
And so the specifics on the dollars, I think, you know, we'll see what happens in Washington.
Okay. With the influx of returning veterans, the mind might turn immediately to medical issues for some people, but one might guess from the intransigent unemployment rate that jobs for veterans would be a huge issue here. How do you compare those issues or view the urgency in both cases?
Well, you know, I was with Brad, a team hosted through the federal VA this wonderful Veterans Jobs Summit in Detroit last week.
Okay.
And what this was is this was bringing all the different houses of the VA into one spot so that veterans could understand what their opportunities were for jobs, what their opportunities were for small business, what their opportunities were for benefits.
Okay.
And so we had the privilege of sitting down with you know, the Secretary, Allison Hickey, trying to figure out what we can do to streamline and expedite processing in Michigan. And Dr. Pencil, who is the head of things like the Jacob Eddy Home, trying to figure out what we can do on a better strategy for strategic planning.
Okay.
I also had the privilege and honor to sit down with Secretary Shinseki, you know, combat veteran, Iraq, a very committed guy.
Yeah.
And I think what he is trying to figure out is how do you cut through the bureaucracy? Because a lot of this goes back to First World War I strategies. When veterans were coming back, they wanted multiple representatives in the cabinet.
Okay.
So the Department of Labor is where all the jobs wound up, but the Small Business Administration is where a lot of the small veteran-owned businesses got their shot, and then over at the VA is where the healthcare side is.
Okay.
And so what happens is we've become so siloed, and this was a very good example of people going over and doing job interviews, and the job interviewer saying, did you know you qualified for the GI Bill? Did you know you qualified for 5 years free healthcare? And did you know that there was other potential disability ratings? Because the veterans coming in didn't know what they had on their benefits. So what the Secretary is really pushing, and we'll see what he is able to get accomplished, is that when people come out of the military 60 days out for their embarkation or leaving discharge from the military, they're going to start getting them signed up for benefits. And that changes the aspects of our Vietnam-era veterans. And when I got out of the military, and I know Brad was in the Coast Guard, was the aspect of how do you, you know, you leave the military and then you go find your records.
Sure.
This is going to be, I think, a real enhancement for benefits.
There's kind of equivalent to, you know, rather than looking at at several doors in front of you and wondering which one to go through. You enter through one door.
Right, sir.
And everybody, and it's all there.
And so I think, this no wrong door policy that we're trying to put together is going to be very, very positive.
Yeah.
But, when you're dealing with bureaucracies, I think that's the frustration for our veterans because, you got to run every table.
Absolutely.
And that becomes a bit of a challenge for folks.
I'd like to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about the Veterans Benefit System and Veteran Services with Michigan Senior Deputy Director for Veterans Affairs, Jason Allen, and Oscar G. Johnson Veterans Administration Medical Center Public Affairs Officer, Brad Nelson. Veteran employment would certainly be a big issue for states trying to pull themselves out of the recession right now. Department of Labor statistics suggest that recent veterans are more likely to be unemployed than their civilian counterparts. And it's based on this. Over the past decade, the jobless rate has averaged about 11.7% for veterans, where the comparable figure for non-veterans is about 9%, or 9% for the general population. How are we gearing up for that challenge?
Well, unfortunately, Michigan is in worse shape than those statistics.
Okay.
But I know, Brad, you've got a great program that you're doing.
Yeah, we have a couple of programs. One is we now have a voc rehab counselor here in Marquette, actually, and has worked with some of our veterans at the Jacob Eddy State Home there, mm-hmm. so David Urlery there. And so we're happy to have him. Also, we are looking at partnering. Actually, there's another one we're looking at partnering with, the Dickinson Area Partnership. They're looking at bringing in a tech center. And partnering with them, and we'd be providing the benefit of health care for those that qualify for it. And then thirdly, it does kind of, when you talked about a tension between, the job benefits as well as the health care benefits,
sure.
What door. It would be nice to have one door. At the moment, it's probably confusing, but we still look at it working hand in hand. We have a program called Moving Forward that we're just starting. We're actually trying to market that out there. And that's for those veterans that are trying to reach their life goals. And we know even before the recession, having been through a few retirement classes myself when I was an officer in the Coast Guard, they talk about the ones that can't find jobs right away. And pretty soon it does affect your attitude. And it can even cause depression. And so we see that having these programs that we can get them, motivated. They may be having a time of, lack of motivation or a negative attitude because of what they're going through, and especially
obviously
with the recession.
Mm-hmm.
So this program here, this class that we're having, it's a classroom setting. It's a group setting. It's going to meet 4 one-week sessions. And you can call the medical center and sign up for that. But the idea is to give them problem-solving skills to overcome those obstacles that are maybe keeping them from keeping looking for a job. And again, just one part. It's not just jobs, but it may be motivation and having a good marriage or to accomplish other goals. But like in this context, yes, it is very important because it does affect your attitude, and then it can go from there. So we are trying to help the veteran in that area.
Okay, that's called Moving Forward.
Moving Forward, right.
People will look for that.
Okay, but the one thing that I want you to think through, and this is one of the unique challenges that I think a lot of our business entrepreneurs don't recognize, is that the skill sets that a veteran comes back with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Item number one is that we all understand structure.
Yeah.
We understand bureaucracy. We're drug-free. We have been through, we understand in a diversity, or excuse me, in very difficult situations how to put things off, get things done. And so that is a real benefit in comparison to a lot.
You know how to give proper deference to authority.
Exactly. And you know that, and that is part of the process. And when you start talking, look at people from Chamber of Commerce's and doing hiring, they really are looking for those skill sets.
Okay.
On top of that, they get the GI Bill for training. 5 years free health care, and then also a tax credit.
The right now, it's marketing skill sets is obviously the way to go. Mm-hmm. Rather than marketing a job you had in the service, people don't understand what the jobs are. But they certainly understand or would be able to understand the skills required if they were explained properly. I know that there are some people actively looking for those skill sets, and some of them may be coming out of the manufacturing sector, which is Michigan's biggest sector. I know there are going to be new jobs, or there that new jobs are predicted in high-tech manufacturing. How is that likely to affect former service members?
Well, the first issue is that under the leadership of Chairman France in the House, and then Representative Haynes specifically, mm-hmm. they've gone through and started looking at what they call MOS, which is your job description in the military.
Okay.
And they've done their first three pieces of legislation, which are plumbers, carpenters, and then also security folk. And so if you're an MP, then that allows you to take your MCOLs and do some more flexibility on using your time in the military as training to qualify for your what type of certification you need. Mm-hmm. Then we also know that if you're an Army medic or a Navy corpsman and administering significant amount of morphines, drugs, all kinds of different things mm-hmm. in the field, you've got to go back in the state to square one, and that's wrong.
Absolutely.
And so there, we know that you know when you look at our hospitals in northern Michigan and our peninsula that we're going to be needing those skill sets. So that is going to be the next big area, x-ray techs, the whole area of the aspect of healthcare. Then the question gets into is what do you do as a rifleman? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are those MOS skill sets? And those are going to be, and, you know, I was a tanker, and so there's not a lot of, you know, I mean, we have great skill sets, but, you know, those are going to be a little bit more challenging to get applications for. But I think then from there, this aspect of using the GI Bill.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it's just a huge opportunity for us.
Okay. And it is a great opportunity. Even in the Reserves and National Guard, there's the Guard and Reserve version of the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. And my son was right. using that before right. he deployed, and I have the GI Bill as well. But for those that are coming back, it is a great way, like to say, is to retool themselves to get those marketable skills and to market themselves, you know, as a college graduate with benefits of having served in the military in a structured environment, but not totally relying on that I was in the military.
Sure. Jason, I recently caught part of an interview you conducted on Michigan government television about job assistance. There are a couple of topics I thought we might just touch on here. First, can you tell us about the VOW Act?
Okay, the VOW Act is under the Department of Labor.
Okay.
And what that is designed to do is to take disabled veterans and give them additional support in getting them retraining. So when you take a look at the demographics of an individual coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, mm-hmm. where you've got for every death there are 24 survivors, sure. we have a much higher disability rating than in World War II. For every death there were two survivors.
Yeah.
And so we are going to need to give those young men and women the opportunity to be better trained and adjust to the challenges that they received because of their enduring time in combat.
Okay.
So the VOW Act is designed to restructure how we are able to deliver benefits for disabled veterans. And this is going to give them additional training dollars. It's going to give them additional assistance as they're going through college. Because what we talked a little bit is that a percentage of folks that have, you know, post-stress may have a harder time reading, may have a harder time comprehending. They work through those issues. But for the first year or two in college, those may need extra tutoring, extra skills, help to get through, and that's what the VOW Act is going to be designed to do. And it's very, very, we're very optimistic about this because it then forces DVALs and leavers, which is on the labor side,
okay.
under MEDC, which does a great job to also then ask about their other benefits.
I see. Okay. Finally, what job-related activities are planned for Camp Grayling?
Okay, Camp Grayling is the largest.
Yeah,
it's the largest facility east of the Mississippi for the military.
Yeah.
And so what we're trying to look at it is because we have all this acreage, wonderful technology, great infrastructure there. Mm-hmm. Is then can we use this as a training site? And we've been talking to leaders in the power area. You know, if you need to train linemen, you know, we've got hundreds of power lines. We've got hundreds of different places that they can use for on-site training.
Okay.
And so our goal is then because of the facility, the dormitories, you can feed these guys or women, you can house them fairly affordably, and then use this as a place to get your basic skills in fundamental areas. And we look into the future on computers, we look into the future on manufacturing, so that you can get that basic set before you go into advanced programming, whether it be in the power industry or manufacturing areas.
Okay. Perhaps the most frustrating issue on veterans' benefits has to do with the backlog of pending disability claims. There are now over 900,000, and they appear to have grown despite some new hires, and you know, no one seems to be able to get a handle on the whole problem. But I was wondering, with the growing complexity and number of injuries and diseases and all these other things going on right now, what your observations on that backlog are? What the what's happened and why, do you think? Okay. Just from your
Well, I think there is an increase.
Yeah, increase in the backlog. Obviously, we've had a, you know, we've been in conflict, armed conflict, for over 10 years now. And so anecdotally, that's, you know, one of the reasons. And like you said, and like Jason had said, is that, you know, the survivability rate in right. today's conflict mm-hmm. is much greater. And I do know that is a very high priority within the VA. Unfortunately, I can't talk too much more about it because, again, that's part of the Veterans okay. Benefit Administration, yeah. so okay. I don't have all right. the where's and why's on that. But I do know that it is a high priority. And I, again, as a user of that, there is a lag time. Right.
I know there would be 4,000 new processing people added under this bill mm-hmm. we talked about earlier, which might help. But there have been other things done, too.
What we have done in the state, which is was been monumental under leadership of Allison Hickey and then Dave Leonard, who is the processor in Detroit, is that we've actually now got all of our folk that we've worked with to put in standardizational language. It's not perfect yet. Mm-hmm. But if you have diabetes from exposure in Vietnam, we are using the same wording throughout the system.
I see.
And okay. so that has helped the rating times. Yeah. And then they are also pushing internally to talk back and forth with our people that are filling out the paperwork so that if there are questions. And Mr. Leonard down in Detroit, which is where most of the disability ratings is, has reduced that time log by about 30 days. Now, it's still not very good.
Okay.
And we've got a long way to go. The other thing that I'm very optimistic about is when they rolled out e-benefits. Because this will now allow, through your organization, to check your where the processing is.
I see.
Now, we still very much strongly encourage if you use a professional to fill out your paperwork, a county counselor, a person from the VFW, American Legion, Marine Corps League, you usually find that it's about a 20% more efficient process.
In other words, people collect more benefits if they talk to an expert.
Right, because yeah. they know what the and then they also 20% more in the speed of getting the processing done because okay. they use the right wording.
I know there are other things being done to shrink the inventory, updates in computer software, digitizing records, extending overtime to process mm-hmm. claims, and that sort of thing. Where's this process in the UP?
You know? Well, the process itself is actually out of Milwaukee and Detroit at the okay. regional offices. Okay. So it's really not in the UP. What we provide at the medical center is when
but
they put
you,
in a
are
claim.
Are you seeing some effects of this in the Upper Peninsula, I guess is what I would say.
That's really hard to say because we don't see that directly.
But you've done the physicals, though, didn't
we
they?
We do the physicals.
Right.
That's what
and
I'm saying.
So
we
are getting
that's right. That's what is happening. And even then, and what we always like to emphasize is if what we call a compensation and pension exam, what happens is once you get back with, okay, they're starting to process it, then you will be called by the medical center for an exam, what we call a comp and pen exam. And it's what we like to say is very important that you keep that because, again, there's so many that we need to
sure.
be doing that you don't want to miss that appointment. Right. So, but that's our role in it where we do the exam and then we send it out. But we don't do the ratings. Right. That's still at the regional office.
Okay. There's, you know, always the business of taking care of people is pretty difficult. I understand that. Before we get to, before we want to even talk about these specific programs, perhaps we might talk about the latest on the congressional effort. Now, I'd like a reaction to the recent high court ruling upholding the Affordable Health Care Act. Is that going to make things easier, make it more difficult? What do you see?
I really can't answer that because I don't think we know exactly. However, despite whether we have that or not, our goal, Jim Rice is our director, and his vision, our vision as a staff, is to be the health care of choice for veterans. And we were saying in 2014, okay. when this act really kicks in. Takes effect, because many veterans will have more choices potentially to get other insurance or through these exchange portals. However, we want to be their health care choice. You know, we don't want to lose them. However, it's not just that. Even now, we have veterans that have insurance, they have their own insurance, and we want to be their health care of choice now, regardless of down the road. But right now, that's our goal for that.
I'm afraid we're out of time. We've been talking about veterans services with Michigan Senior Deputy Director for Veterans Affairs, Jason Allen, and Oscar G. Johnson, Veterans Administration Medical Center Public Affairs Officer Brad Nelson. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hart Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.